2. Here we go. This is EarthSpeak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd with you on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in today. And, yeah, we have a full hour of stuff happening. And, you know, we've got Michelle Tyrene Johnson in the studio, M.G. Salazar, Rodolfo Miranda III, Ryan Wilkes, and our very beautiful and talented Bill Sundahl, who's going to catch us up to date on what's happening with KKFI, because it's really important that, you know, we know what's going on with KKFI. Do you know what's going on, Bill?
Yes, I do know what's going on. Thank you, Maria, for having me on your wonderful show. Yeah. And
there's so much
company indeed.
Yeah, there's so much going on, and all the information can be found at our website. But go ahead.
Well, I am here mainly today to talk about the KKFI Spring Band Auction, which is coming up next Friday, April 6th. So, and it is sponsored by Stockyards Brewing Company. Woohoo! They support local music in this way and support KKFI in sponsoring the band auction. So basically, the band auction is this. We ask artists to come on the air and play for half an hour, and then we set up a phone bank and auction them off to the highest bidder for a two-hour show somewhere within an hour of KC within the next year. So.
Yeah, and I can tell you that last year it was crazy.
Oh, man.
You know, I ended up winning 3 of the bands.
Lucky
Star
you.
Haven. I know Star Haven Rounders, mm-hmm. Calvin Arsenia, right. And Trio Atzlan. And that was terrific because, you know, we didn't have a particular celebration in mind for those bands, but it just kind of happened that way. And we were so happy that you guys took care of us musically.
We were honored. really, your party was a blast. I'm in the Star Haven Rounders if it didn't make sense to anyone. And yeah, we auctioned ourselves off in the spring band auction. And we're on the auction block on Rockabilly Mood Swing, which is be Friday, April 6th at 5:30 p.m. And so, yeah, this is all a fundraiser for KKFI. The artists are kind and generous enough to donate their time and their skills, and then generous donors call in and donate their money to support the station and to outbid their fellow music lovers, which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever been in a phone bidding war before.
You know what? I was answering phones in and bidding. I was. It's like, I'm going to get this one. But all the bands will be featured or will be listed on the website,
so
right?
KKFI.org/band auction is where you can find all the information. We are updating the list of artists on the website as they come in. Mm-hmm. I think right now we've got everybody listed up through Friday, and then hopefully by the end of this week or better, we'll have a complete list. And then there's always some kind of getting added as we go through the week. People, you know, like, oh man, I forgot to sign up. And, you know, this is also a call to artists. So if you haven't signed up for the band auction yet, please get a hold of me. You can call 888-931-0901. Also, that number you can pre-bid on a band that you know is involved already.
That would be a smart deal.
It's a way to get it started. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so on that advanced bidding, is there a set dollar amount?
And there is. So each band has a beginning bid that's listed on the website.
Yeah.
So and it varies depending on who they are.
So can I get you for $25?
No, you cannot. But me personally, probably yes, but not the band. They're worth way more than I am.
Oh dear. So yeah, this is great. It starts April 6th and it runs through April 8th.
Yes.
And
then, so I can give you the times too.
If
you,
yeah.
So on April 6th, we'll be starting at 7 a.m. I think. So it just depends on who can sign up and when. That's when we're probably going to start on RJ's show. And then if for some reason bands don't want to come in at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. and perform, which is crazy, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, no kidding.
Then we'll maybe start it in the afternoon. So it'll be Friday, potentially, from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. And then we're not going to interrupt the news shows in the morning. So from 8 to 10 will still be normal programming. And then we'll take over all the music shows.
So
and then Saturday is 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. So that takes over the Blues Kitchen and Woman Song.
Okay.
And then Sunday is from 8 a.m. all the way until 6 p.m. if we have enough artists sign up. Sometimes it ends at 5 or, you know, like I said, just really depends.
So for more information, easy for you to say, right. You can call my bill.
Yep. Or you just go, yeah.
At 888-931-0901.
888-931-0901.
I just wanted to see. Is that all right?
Yes, of course that's fine. So also you can go to kkfi.org/bandauction. If you're an artist, it tells all the information on how to sign up. And then if you are interested in, buying a band on the air and bidding on a band and winning for your party or bar mitzvah or, you can have a corn shucking, pool party. So the Rounders we've been lucky enough to get bought a few times, mm-hmm. and we have played some really fun parties. So it was your get mom's bought. 70th?
Actually, she's older than that. But
900th.
Sorry, Mom.
But we had a big birthday party that we played for you.
We had a celebration.
We played a pool party last year. Yeah. And then we also played another one that Jim and Danny have bought us for the last several years. Mm-hmm. And they produce mm-hmm. a benefit for another nonprofit area and use us as the entertainment for that. Well, it's a lot of fun. And it's doing good and having a great time.
I had always wanted to have a barn dance, so I was able to find a space to rent and had you guys in, and that was in the fall, and it was really wonderful.
It really was.
We'd had a tough year, so it was great to have you guys there and have lots of food and chicken all kinds
I'm
of stuff.
So from that one.
Yeah.
Also, your family knows how to dance. They got their stuff together.
We're Latin, baby.
True.
So now that's just one thing that's happening.
Yeah. So that is April 6th, 7th, and 8th, and again, all of that information is at kkfi.org/bandauction. Another thing that KKFI does is help support other events that are already going on. And so we're sponsoring the Outer Reaches Fest. So Outer Reaches Fest is usually like a psych rock fest, but they're sort of branching out and they take a really wide view of what psychedelic means. So, or it's not really psychedelic. So basically anyone who's anyone who's pushing the boundaries of whatever genre they're in, that's kind of what they focus on. So Outer Reaches Explores the World is something that KKFI is sponsoring, and we're happy to help spread the word about their event. And, in theory, people will learn about KKFI through this, and it's a win-win for us for
sure.
And
where is this at?
And this is going to be at the Record Bar on Friday, April 20th. So Enrique Javier Chi of Making Movies will perform. And Harptasia featuring Calvin Arsenia. So that's several harp players with him, kind of running the show.
I'd love to hear him play some Mazteco, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Rudy's like, what the heck? Never mind.
Inside jokes work really well on the radio. I don't know if you guys, people out there, know that. Sunu is also playing there, a band out of Lawrence, and the banjo songstress Terry Quinn.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
then Brandon Draper's Drum Safari is going to be like an interactive workshop. Yeah. So they do like a kids mm-hmm. show a lot. You know, that's a lot of what the Drum Safari does, but this is more adult-oriented mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. get you moving and get you involved. And and then the in-betweens would be DJ Mimo and then projections by XO Blackwater, which is a pretty cool. They do pretty sweet stuff.
Terrific.
Like live projections and mixing on the floor.
Is that on our website as well?
It is not. So you would go to outerreachesfest.com to learn about that. And again, that's Friday, April 20th at Record Bar.
And all this stuff you're talking about, do we have a Facebook event page on
this one? You would go through their stuff. Mm-hmm. The band auction should be up. I've been sort of waiting to get a few more artists lined up before mm-hmm. we made the Facebook event. So we will be sending out email blasts. So if you're on our email list already, great. If not, go to the homepage of our website and sign up for that. And again, all of our contact information for the band auction is at kkfi.org/bandauction. What else? We've got a pledge drive.
The Folly.
So
gosh,
KKFI's 30th anniversary right now. We're in our 30th year on the air. Another 11 years of fundraising before that still blows my mind. So this place is really like 41 years old. But on the air for 30 years. So we're holding our 30th anniversary party at the Folly Theater on Saturday, June 30th.
You know, last year was incredible. I think we sold out, didn't we? But
no, we did not. But it was really, really great.
I'm trying to make us look good.
I know. We looked great. Are you kidding me? It just didn't sell out. There's no need to BS the people, Maria. They know.
What is the date on this?
It is Saturday, June 30th. So I'll just try and give a quick overview of the show. So tickets are on sale. And I refuse to comment. Tickets are on sale right now through the Follies website. So you can go to, but you can go to kkfi.org/events and find out about this wonderful show. So we're going to have two house bands. One's going to be sort of run by Michelle Bacon, and the other is going to be by Clint Ashlock, who runs the Kansas City Jazz Orchestra. So it won't be the full jazz orchestra. Mm-hmm. They're a big, you know, but so there'll be another house band. So, and basically we're going to have like a song from a ton of different styles of musicians try and represent the programming of KKFI.
Because we're celebrating the 30
stage,
years,
right? And so we're going to kick off the show with Rosie's Bar and Grill, who's a folk band who played at the very first Midcoast Radio Project fundraiser in 1977. So it's a great way to kick off the show. They're still a band after 41 years. That's amazing. And so, and then Bob and Diana Sukiel are going to perform, and they're going to do Bob Dylan's When the Ship Comes In. That was the first song that was ever played.
Clean it up, Trash Mouth.
What? That was the first song that was ever played on KKFI over the air. So, and then Sarah Morgan's going to play, Una Walkenhorst, Amanda Fish, Gerald Trimble and Jan Baroque. Julia Othmer is coming back to town for it. I think we're going to have... so there's a few other things I can't really mention because they're not solidly confirmed. Mm-hmm. But there's basically going to be about 10 to 12 different artists involved outside of the house band. So it's going to be really, really fun. We probably will get more involved. I won't be able to stop saying yes. But
you know,
I guess, so.
And it's
but
a great...
All of that's at kkfi.org/events. VIP tickets, I think there's still some of those left. And we'll do a VIP event. We're going to use the whole lobby of the Folly for our VIP event. And that'll kick off a little early, like around 6. And then the event's at 7.
And I think there's some sort of deal worked out with the hotel there,
that
too,
That is
right?
exactly right. Yeah. So the Marriott, right next door to the Folly, they gave us a super sweet rate, and you can find all that information once you get to the Folly's page for the ticketing. Also at kkfi.org/events, there's basically a link you click, and when you get your ticket, your hotel room for that night, it's half price.
Mm-hmm.
Which is no small, like, I mean, it's half of 300, I think. I mean, it's usually really expensive at the Marriott. So.
Yeah, and it's great just, you know, to be able to check in, walk over to the Folly.
Yep, exactly.
And,
right. And so I think the deal is you have to, when you reserve your room, and then you just show your ticket when you check in so that they know it's sort of like a partnership deal that we have going with them.
Well, so. Bill, you've told us a lot of stuff today. So thank you.
KKFI.org
and everything's
has all
on
the info.
The website.
Yep.
And the Facebook page will be coming soon.
Yeah, well, yes, yeah. All that stuff's coming soon.
Yeah. Yep. And if folks want more information, the website, or if they're interested in performing for
the
donating
band
their band auction.
Yep.
Yeah,
and so that's all at kkfi.org/band auction. My email is development@kkfi.org. That's also on that page. Or you can call 888-931-0901 and sign up to come and play live on the air and have some fun here at KKFI.
I'm telling you, that's the best way to get some really great music, live music in your house or your garage or your basement or, you know, public place.
I mean,
place.
It's corporate events. People end up done weddings. It's really, I love hearing the stories of where people end up playing. I've had bands come in here and go, you need to make sure if this guy calls that he wins. Like, because they've just made new friends and fans and become close with all the folks that they've played with over the years. And it's building community.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
What we do here.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Bill Sundahl. And is there anything else that we left off?
Oh, I'm sure there is, but you've got a whole room full of guests here waiting to talk. So just give me a call. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
888-931-0901. Thank you, my friend. And we're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio after this. This is for you, Bill. We like that, don't we? Fifth Dimension, you don't hear them very often. Thank you so much for tuning in to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I think Bill Sundahl and I had way too much coffee this morning, so that's okay. Up next, we have a roundtable discussion. I've invited artists to join me, artists and writers to join me, social activists. We're going to talk about cultural appropriation, and Wikipedia defines cultural appropriation or cultural misappropriation as a concept in sociology dealing with the adoption of the elements of a minority culture by members of the dominant culture. And so we hear In the studio, we have Michelle Tyrene Johnson. Hello, Michelle.
Hello.
Terrific. And MG Salazar.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Let me turn up your volume. Rodolfo Moran III.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
And Ryan Wilkes.
Present.
Yeah, very good. I just wanted to have a roundtable discussion because, you know, currently at the Nelson Atkins Museum, there's an exhibition of work by Pablo Picasso. And I know that, you know, you hear that name and you just go, wow, you know, great artist, blah, blah, blah. And yet, there's been a lot of discussion built around his cultural appropriation of objects from other cultures and sort of not having any sort of acknowledgement of the foundation of his work or the inspiration from his work. And so we're going to talk about that today, just have a sort of a roundtable discussion. You know, cultural misappropriation is often portrayed as harmful in contemporary cultures and is claimed to be a violation of the collective intellectual property rights of the originating minority cultures, notably indigenous cultures, and those living under colonial rule. According to critics of the practice, it is a form, cultural misappropriation is a form of colonialism, and, you know, often unavoidable when multiple cultures come together, cultural exchange as well as misappropriations. They can include using other cultures' cultural and religious tradition, fashion, symbols, language, and songs. So I'm going to ask Michelle Tyrene Johnson to start off with her opinions, her views, because you were a part of this panel discussion at the Nelson Atkins Museum discussing Picasso's work, right?
Yes. You know, it's always a controversial thing to talk about appropriation, cultural appropriation, when we're talking about art, because I think the line between, as I always say, between appropriation and appreciation is a really, really fine one. And, you know, the more I think about it, the more I think it's that thing you can't quite define.
Like pornography, you know,
sort of
when
like
you see
pornography,
it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's sort of like my dear friend Ryan Wilkes, who's here with me as a guest, and you know, you were smart to invite him because he's like this great artist. And, you know, he, outside when we were all talking, he was, you know, a little bit like, oh, I don't know, I'm going to hold back because I'm white. And I'm like, no, you better not hold back because you are white, but you're an artist. And you're not somebody who culturally appropriates, but you do appreciate other cultures. And I do think it's just that line between you don't, you got to figure out where somebody's coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm surprised that that's a comment that you would make because you have really been outspoken in the community as an activist in your work. But I kind of get it. So talk about that, would you?
Well, I mean, the only thing that I can speak on is my own experience as a queer person, as a non-binary person. So, you know, I don't think I'm an authoritative voice at all as far as like racial or like, you know, actual cultural appropriation for other cultures and other races. Because I don't know if my opinion holds any weight because I am white.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? The rest of you.
Don't hold back, let it
yeah,
out.
It's like, I want something to climb up on me. Go ahead, MG.
Oh, of course, I'll be on the spot here. Well, I feel like this is an inclusive conversation that we need to have. And having an inclusive conversation means including everyone, which includes you, darling. You know I love you, Ryan. So it's always good to have that, you know, voices from every single perspective that we possibly can, I think.
I mean, I'm a writer. I'm not a visual artist. So I'm glad there's a visual artist because your mindset and what you do and how you create art is a little bit different than how a writer creates art. And so what may not, I mean, I can erase a page, but once you've painted something or created something that's physical, that's a little bit different. And I mean, you know, like I said in the panel, it's hard for any of us to figure out how much inspiration has, pun intended, colored our work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was a little guilty of that in high school and early in my career as a visual artist. I was very inspired by like the Native American church and peyotism and just kind of looking at the symbolism and the imagery in folklore, and I was really taken by that. Mm-hmm. So early on, I was kind of just experimenting, and I dove into this world and this culture that wasn't necessarily mine. And I think the first time that I acknowledged that, I was interviewing with Cooper Union, and the counselor, whatever he was, asked me, he's like, what tribe are you a part of? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm not a part of no tribe. But then I started to look at the imagery. I'm like, okay, like, I see what's happening. So what I decided to do is dive deeper into my own spirituality, which led me to Amada Cardenas, who grew peyote in South Texas. And so I started to look at this strong feminine figure, and then that also continued to lead me to looking at figures like Marsha P. Johnson, but then really kind of going further into like my own queer history and my own queer background, and digging deeper over the years and really tapping into a world and language that was of my own, of being Chicanx, Latinx, and looking at images of like mm-hmm. La Virgen de Guadalupe, mm-hmm. and then being able to reach back and bring Amada Cardenas and bring Marsha P. Johnson into this into the foreground, and kind of having this more refined, harmonious expression than sort of how I was stumbling at the beginning. I really appreciated it. I loved everything about that culture, and I just wanted to be immersed in it, and I didn't realize what was happening and how that could translate until I had some perspective and growth as a visual artist later on.
When, and some folks feel that appropriation is not a crime. I mean, it seems like in some contexts, of course, but it's a way to breathe new life into culture. But I want to mention something that Michelle brought up at the panel discussion was a fashion, you know, and the appropriation of culture and fashion, because I think, you know, a lot of criticism has happened because of that, or, you know, with the singers like Katy Perry and all that. So would you speak about that?
Right. Yeah, in my presentation, I went more to the whole issue of cultural appropriation in pop culture and how people just sort of routinely just take from other people's culture because it looks pretty or it looks good or it looks different or it, you know, it's used to jazz up their blandness. I mean, Victoria's Secret models are always strutting out on stage with, I mean, they'll throw a headdress on in a minute or something from another culture. Yeah. Katy Perry is, you know, chief appropriator, you know, of in pop culture. And I think the distinction is whether you come across as having any knowledge or any reverence, any honor or respect for what you are putting in your work. That's why, you know, Rodolfo, what you were doing sounded way different from what these other folks do. You were appreciating it and using it to enhance your artistic aesthetic, which I think is which is very, very different. I mean, like, my criticism of Picasso was he had all this African art. I mean, boyfriend collected African art, like, you know, it was like jelly beans.
Yeah.
But he never stepped off, you know, foot off of Europe. He did, you know, I jokingly wanted to say, I didn't say it at Nelson, I'll say it here on the air for the entire world, that this was one of the times when it would have helped him to say, yes, one of my best friends is black. He is African, you know, but, you know, alas, you know, he was just taking the stuff and just superficially putting it in his work. And I just think that's kind of the line, the superficiality of it.
Yeah. Well, and I also know that what came under criticism, too, was Salome Awa, the Inuit woman, Nunavut woman that had her grandfather's garment, her grandfather's sacred garment copied right down to the T for a fashion designer, a UK-based fashion label. And I just find that just criminal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think it has to do with, really, it comes down to the capitalization of other people's cultures and the privilege that people just assume. Like, for instance, Katy Perry, like, maybe not be so critical of her and other people that appropriate in pop culture if they actually brought attention to those people and actually attempted to educate about those people. And, you know, like I see people appropriating Native things all the time, and it's like you ask them, do you know about Standing Rock? And they look at you like with blank eyes, you know. But if they were actually giving a portion of the proceeds to, you know, women's groups or to fund, you know, the Longest Walk or anything like that, or were bringing attention to any of these plights by any of these people, that would make it more of an appreciation because you're giving back to them because you're making these millions of dollars. Katy Perry is not hurting. None of those people are hurting. Yeah, yeah. But there's 40% of the Dine Reservation that doesn't have running water. And yet they aren't, you know, able to sue Urban Outfitters over making a clothing line called Navajo.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, I kind of wanted to speak a little bit more specifically on that idea of, like, fashion and cultural appropriation. So I'm actually wearing a shirt that was given to me as a gift that says Westside. And this was purchased at Westside Story in the Westside area. So that's the area that I grew up. And initially, I enjoyed the T-shirt. I received it as a gift. And then I started to kind of have an issue with it as I was at High Dive, and I saw, like, this skinny white kid wearing the same T-shirt, not the same time. But then I found that to be very faulty, because I remember growing up in the 90s and early 2000s in the West Side, that if you had the West Side printed on any of your garments, it meant, like, that you were part of that gang, because the West Side was against the East Side Loquitos and the Florencia in Kansas. So that was very much, like, if you had that printed on your clothing, you were seen as a thug. And so kind of thinking about all these brown men in the West Side that, you know, are viewed as that, now there's, like, this hipster white dude and this, like, very hipster storefront in the West Side calling themselves the West Side Local. I don't know. It kind of messed with my head, and just seeing how problematic that could be and projecting this area and not knowing anything about the history, not knowing anything about the young brown men that were murdered in defending their block, and really appreciating it and really sort of, you know, being a part of that community. When you just come in, you want to slap something on a T-shirt and or have organic food and call it a day.
I get it. I get it. You know, we're going to take a real quick break right now. We're going to play some Underwriting. I'm going to play a little bit of music, and you all have a sip of drink of water, and we'll be right back. I love those guys, and happy birthday to Philip Bauer, because we love you, Philip. And I brought you a chocolate croissant, but Ebony ate it, so there you go. Welcome back to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, and I have a very special hour, 45 minutes, with artists here in the studio, artists, writers, social activists, Michelle Tyrene Johnson, M.G. Salazar, Rodolfo Moran III, Ryan Welts. They're all here. So excited. Look at them. Taking a nap during the break. You know, I just have a real quick announcement to make that may be of interest to you. The Office of Multicultural Affairs, in collaboration with their co-sponsors, will be hosting More Than a Word at Haskell Auditorium at Haskell Indian Nations University tomorrow, March 29th at 7 p.m., and a conversation immediately following the screening with the filmmakers John and Ken Little. More Than a Word offers a fascinating look inside the growing movement to change the name of the Washington Redskins football team. Now, this is directed by brothers John and Ken Little, who are members of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. The film traces how the word Redskin evolved from being a term of racist derision and slander to being embraced as the name of one of the NFL's most beloved franchises. It also draws on the voices of Native American activists and scholars to place this controversy within the wider context of Native American history and racial stereotyping more generally. So that's tomorrow at 7 p.m. at Haskell Indian Nations University in Haskell Auditorium. So there you go. That might be of interest to folks, and I know there's going to be a discussion afterwards. Welcome back. So on this week's Facebook event page and on our website, I posted a photo of Amanda P.L., who was criticized for her work that's practically lifted from the Indigenous folks in Canada. And 6 years ago, She traveled to Thunder Bay in Ontario to study art education at Lakehead University. And there she became entranced with the surrealistic form of Anishinaabe painting known as the Woodland Style. Well, when she returned home to Toronto, where she was born and raised, she began to paint woodland paintings. Next month, she was to have her first solo exhibition at the New Visions Gallery, and the show, however, has been canceled. So, you know, what do you think about that happening in the art world of, you know, someone being so inspired or moved by work, much like Picasso's, that maybe, you know, the line is blurred a bit?
Well, how open is she about her inspiration from... about the work?
Well, and I'm quoting her, she says she had blessings from a lot of Aboriginal people, and so she didn't feel like she was appropriating their work. But if you look at her website, or even look at the photo that I used on that, you can see there's just...
And if I recall, because I remember, it's been a while since I read about it, but she got very defensive about it.
Yeah.
It's basically, she took the standpoint of, which I've seen a lot of white playwrights do, not locally, but on this national, international page. Basically, how dare anybody say that I, as a white person, can't do art involving another culture. And it's not... that you can't, you can do whatever you want, but if you get defensive about it and act as if you can't be questioned, and my thing is, this is just me, this, you know, it's my personal opinion, none of my reviews are to be attributed to my job at KCUR 89.3 radio. That's my plug for my job. Anyway, is... seriously, why are you writing about other cultures if you don't personally have any real involvement in those in those cultures? I mean, the number of people who will argue their right, for example, to write a play about a group of people when they just don't know anybody in that group. It's the same with art. That's great if you studied an indigenous culture while you were in Canada, but what's your true connection?
And for her, she obviously disagreed and said that she says she is just Canadian and offers freely that she has no Native American roots. But, you know, to defend, you know, her work, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. In the United States, we have what's called the Indian Arts and Crafts Law of 1990. And if you are not an enrolled member of a tribe or an approved artisan of a tribe, which is not necessarily enrolled in the tribe, but you have gone through enough training that their board believes that you are skilled and knowledgeable enough to carry on that tradition for them, they will allow you to do that. I feel like there should be something similar in Canada if there's not.
Yeah.
But then using the excuse, like, I have Indigenous friends that say this is okay, is like towing that line where, like, oh, well, you know, my one Black friend said it was okay, or my one Mexican friend said it was okay. That doesn't work when you're doing that with art. I mean, First Nations people and Indigenous people here in the United States, they sell their jewelry by the roadside. They sell it on the sidewalks. They sell it anywhere that they can because they're basically kept on concentration camps and denied resources. So for a white artist to take that and to take their work and display it, it's exactly like Picasso stealing the work of the Da people and using that just as his art, not even extrapolating on it, but just as his art. That's an insult to everyone who is actually carrying on their own traditions and trying just to feed their families.
Yeah. You know what, in doing a little bit of the research for this program, you know, there's so much out there on the internet about cultural appropriation, misappropriation, and whatnot. I found a list of 7 things you may not realize are cultural appropriation that are. Want to hear it? Authentic food and appropriation. Do you remember reading about that, the two women in, I think it was in Portland, Oregon?
That they got shut down.
You want to tell the story?
You probably know.
What was that supposed to mean?
No, because you took a breath in.
I'm kidding. I don't remember the story very well, but I think it was two white women that were that had traveled to Mexico, and I guess they were even they blatantly said that they were peeking through the windows and kind of aggressively, trying to get the recipes of these tortillas, and then they went back to Portland, Oregon to copy the recipes and try to
and they start were a the hit. Business. They were a hit.
Of course they were.
Until they got shut down.
Of course they were. Because honestly, which gets back to the problem, the real problem of appropriation, is people go, well, why are you interfering with my enjoyment of something? It doesn't matter where it came from. We've all appropriated everything. Except when we haven't.
And also white people like to buy food from people who look like them.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, I think... At least, like, growing up, my family owned a Mexican restaurant in the West Side, and so I become very defensive and protective and agitated when I see restaurants that are operated by white folk. I mean, I don't know if we... I think it's important to start calling out these places here in Kansas City, but I think... I don't know if they've resolved it, but I think, like, Tiki Taco might have had, like, an issue.
Tiki Taco.
I don't know. I just, like,
Tacos
the name,
like
the name of,
like... Made.
I remember the name of, like, Tiki Taco. I think they cited, like, it being a style from Michoacan. My family's from Michoacan. I don't remember anything.
I've been to Michoacan.
Yeah, I don't remember, like, nachos being on the menu there.
I got shamed into not going there to eat. I was like, once I heard all about the cultural appropriation issue, I was like, dang it.
Right.
Because nobody wants to feel as if they're participating in it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do that, like, give back. Do something for that community. Mm-hmm. But also seeing how faulty it is, once again, like, restaurants, like, Mexican-owned or Latino-owned restaurants that are struggling to really feed their family. And these are people that already own a cell phone business and are defending their right to be able to sell this. And it's like, well, why don't you make Filipino food? Like, if you're of Filipino, like, background, I'm not saying that's what you have to make, but we don't have any Filipino restaurants here. Like, get on that. Get on that train and let the Hispanic, Latino families make their money and have their culture, because that's the only few things that we that they're able to come to this country with: their religious practice, their language, and their food. So it's just and even like there was something I think on the pitch where it was an illustration of the entire Kansas City metro area, and I was looking at the West Side, of course, since I'm from there, and you know they had like the roastery. Mm-hmm. I think they might have had some, like, the Boulevard Brewing Company, but nothing that represented the Mexican-American population that have been there for generations. But then I look at, like, KCK, and there's Taco Republic, like, being represented, and it's like, all right, like, I see what's going on.
Okay, but as a KCK resident, let me just say, that's barely in KCK. I just have to say
right. But still, but I guess just the fact that Taco Republic was being, like, shown, it just shows how...
I get your point.
It shows how faulty it is.
But where something is tells you a lot about appropriation in terms of food, and at least with food, you can look up something. At least I can, before I eat someplace, I can ask questions and I can go on a website usually and look up what someone's background. With art, that's the thing about art is I'm taking the art at its word, so to speak. And that's where appropriation, I think, gets a little bit more dangerous in terms of the harm it has to a group of people.
That was only one of seven things. that you may not realize are cultural appropriation that are using a black scent, chopsticks in hair as a celebration of Asian culture, bindis, headdresses, and other music festival trends, looks that borrow black hairstyles. This one, themed parties that exoticize other cultures, and the last one, honoring other cultures through stereotypical depictions of them. And this is all from Mia Mercado from Bustle Online, May 30th, 2017. You know, we're going to take a real quick break so we can have a drink of water, and you're going to listen to this. And you're listening to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd. I have the lovely and talented creatures, exotic folk here in the studio. Michelle Tyrene Johnson, M.G. Salazar, Rodolfo Moran III, and Brian Waltz. Welcome back, folks.
Hello.
Yeah,
hola.
Yeah. You know, this is just a conversation that could even go for another hour or more. So I would definitely welcome you all back for some more conversation at another time. But I want to kind of close out the program. We have about 10 minutes more or less. Go around the table, Michelle, starting with Michelle Tyrene Johnson. Give us any last thoughts or opinions that you have, and then tell us what's going on in your world, what's upcoming, and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, on this topic, the latest thing that's going on in social media is talk about how the Brooklyn Museum, as in Brooklyn, New York, as in, like, black and brown folk Brooklyn, has hired a new curator of African art, and it is a young white woman. And at the very least, she's not black. She's not black. She's not African. She's not from the diaspora. And you know, just her being the curator of this is in some ways like worse than her like doing a Picasso and maybe taking on a style. Because she's deciding what people are going to see, the setup for how people are going to see African art.
Yeah, she's going to frame it for them. Yeah.
She's going to frame the experience, frame the conversation. And I think that's what people are really concerned about when they see cultural appropriation of art is the colonizing, the Columbusing, so to speak, a perspective.
I've discovered you.
You know, right, where everything is set with white as the default. And again, there's nothing wrong with white being the default for stuff that's white. It's only when it's the default for other cultures that it's the problem. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, and as for what's coming up with me, I mean, I have stuff coming up the day there was an announcement. You just asked me about it on the break. It's next year, but my play, The Green Book Wine Club Train Trip, is going to have a full production at Melting Pot Theater here in town. So
congratulations.
It'll be great to have it here. Yeah.
And any sort of contact information, social media that you want to share with folks if they want to find out more about you?
If you want to yell at me about my comments, you can go on Twitter. And Diva of Diversity is my Twitter handle.
And please, again, share your gig at KCUR with our folks.
I am a reporter covering race, identity, and culture for KCUR, and I'm also part of a national team called Sharing America with those of us from four different cities. In the next couple of years, are doing more stories about race, identity, and culture across the country.
We love that you're there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ryan.
Hello. Just real quick, I mean, I'm working on a really, really big project with Ari Fish, Sean Pruden, and Tim J. Hart. It's called Hear What You Wish, and I've built this gigantic altar with Sean, and it's a spiritual experience, and so I've had to be very cautious, not cautious, but conscious of cultural appropriation during this process, because there's so many spiritual visuals that I could pull from all across the globe. With religious iconography and everything. And so developing an aesthetic that doesn't make any ode to any culture spiritually was really challenging. And one of the things that I struggled with a little bit is that there's hundreds of feathers hanging above the altar. And I did my due diligence to make sure that I'm not presenting them in a way that is derivative of Native American culture.
Beautiful.
And even to the point where they were originally called wish catchers. And I was like, nope, you know, and it's about being conscious. It's about doing due diligence with appropriation because it's really easy to do.
And when does that open?
That opens on April 6th at the Downtown Public Library.
Okay. So the, not, okay, yeah, next Friday. Yeah?
Yeah, thank you for that mini heart attack. It's coming.
And how can folks find out more about you?
Well, if you go on Facebook, my name is Ryan Wilkes, and you can also look up Hear Where You Wish on Facebook, and there's a couple, you know, things on there about it.
And, of course, your website.
Yeah, wilkespainting.com. There's some erotic on there, too. It's pretty saucy.
We love that about Joel. MG.
I think, basically, my ending thoughts would be that if you are going to borrow a theme or an image or a pattern from someone, give your, you know, your work citation page, basically, and try to give back and educate. Use your privilege. Use your voice that you have, just like I use my platform to talk about issues. Use your platform to also talk about issues. I think that that sort of involvement is really what's going to make a lasting impact instead of, you know, squabbling about this every 15 minutes.
Yeah, I get it.
And then coming up for me, I recently was awarded an inspiration grant from Arts KC to write my third book of poetry.
Congratulations.
Thank
we love
you.
That. Great.
Thank you. Yes, I'm really excited to write this book. And also, I'll be putting out a line of merchandise along with that. So I'm really excited to expand into that area. Also, this Saturday, my vintage store, which is at 4247 Walnut, the Scullery Maid, we will have a booth at the Kansas City Oddities and Curiosities Expo.
Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll have all kinds of opium pillows and animal bones and creepy things made out of dead people hair. So come and see us.
What's not to love about that?
I know, right?
And people can get a hold of you on Facebook.
Facebook, MG Salazar. Striking the Black Snake, Poems from Standing Rock is also on Barnes & Noble and Amazon and Facebook. MGSalazar.com, although it's a little out of date.
Well, and I can say you killed it at the Writer's Place several weeks ago, so thank you for that
so
presentation.
Much.
It was beautiful.
Thank you.
Terrific. Next.
All right. I know with the group that I help lead, the Artists of Color Alliance, we have a critique coming up soon. If you're not a member of the Artists of Color Alliance, you can find us on Facebook, ask to join the group, and then you can fill out the form there to be considered for the critique. So it will primarily focus on creatives of color. We'll be bringing in moderators, and this will kind of be an ongoing session for the group. Also, Brown Voices, Brown Pulse is working on a screening of the Brujos. So we're using our magic and trying to get that in the works. So nothing definitive yet.
Is that no? You know, okay, no. Shaking his head. Go ahead.
We're working on that. But so just be attentive, and you can find us on Facebook as well on our page, Brown Voices, Brown Pulse. And for my own artwork, you can find my work on RodolfoMarron.com. Once again, it's a little out of date, but it's there.
Yeah.
I'm just applying for residencies and the Monarch Show that was featured at the Bemis Center, Native and Brown Artists Moving Through the Landscape of the Butterfly. I did not get that title right. It's too long. But that's traveling to San Antonio.
Oh, terrific.
So it's great to see this collection of Brown and Native artists. Works really powerful. Mm-hmm. And I feel really humbled to just kind of be a part of that and to see it sort of traveling around. So
that's terrific. Good for you. And I want to mention that you also had a residency at Fire Island, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This past summer, I had a residency at Art O'Mai in upstate New York, and then I quickly followed that with a residency on Fire Island, and might try to snag up a few other residencies this summer. So
we love that about
you. Bye, Kansas City, for now.
For now. And, I want to say many, many thanks to all my guests here, Michelle Tyrene Johnson, MG Salazar, Rodolfo Moran III, Ryan Wilkes. Thank you so much for participating in this roundtable discussion. Also, thank you to my lovely Bill Sundahl. And, next week, April 4th, we're into April, I'll have Benzie Garza on the show, Erica Iman, Maker Village with Nick Ward. And I'm going to get that Mark Ellen on the program next week, too. So thank you so much,
Thank you.
Well, we'll love you back. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And stay tuned next for my good, dear friend, Jeff Harshberger. Jazz in the Afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. And honey, I'm coming home.